man, here we go again. Up early, feed the dog, out the door, traffic, at the office, boss in some kind of mood today, no time for lunch, annoying coworker, no time to relax, bedtime. Then we gotta do it all again? No way. Because the best way to break up the mundane every day is to play at Wild Rose Casino and Resort. Slots, tables, sports, and a whole lot of perks when you join and play with your club wild card. So, let's play Wild Rose Casino and Resort, Clinton.
Does your financial advisor take the time to really listen to you? Is your financial strategy personalized for you and your family? Will your financial advisor be there as your life and financial situation changes? When you work with Edward Jones, they focus on what's important to you. You'll work together and use an established process to create a personalized financial strategy backed by the advice, tools, and resources to help you reach your goals. And they'll partner with you to help your strategy stay on track. Visit EdwardJones.com or stop by the office of Todd Nash in Coralville, Jeff Rudolph, or Scott McGill in Iowa City, or Travis Whitmore in North Liberty. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Member SIPC.
Hey there, and welcome to the Hawkeye Hotspot podcast here on HawkFanatic.com. Rob Howe, joined as always by Scott Docterman from The Athletic, Thursday, May the 19th, about 10 a.m., a little later today. Scott's had a busy week in Chicago and has a lot on his plate. Hopefully he got to see Mayans. If not, I don't want to spoil it for him this week, but did you?
Oh, yeah. I got home in time to watch the Mayans, and even though I was pretty wiped out over a few days, I stayed up to make sure that I watched the whole thing, and I'm really anxious for next week's episode. That's for sure.
Yeah, we're going to war, and that's not a spoiler, but we're going to war, and it's justified, so... I too am looking forward to next week's episode. I'm kind of doing the Monday, Tuesday night, last season of Better Call Saul, and then Mayans on Tuesday. Mayans is killing Saul right now, in my mind, just in terms of episodes this season. And it's getting better. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated on how all these storylines kind of fold in by the end of the season, because there's just a few that are, you know, they're just kind of inching their way back to the forefront, you know, with Galindo, and
he's coming Emily back Galindo.
Yeah. And then of course Mayans and Sons. I'm sure Trig and those guys all be back, so that's gonna be wild.
Yeah, gonna be a wild finish.
Yeah,
I still haven't caught up on Ozark yet, which is crazy that I haven't watched the rest of that yet. But we'll catch. I caught one episode so far, the second half of the final season. But we'll catch that soon.
I caught that like 3 weeks ago. like the weekend it came out. Yeah, I'd recommend you watch it.
Club basketball is sucking up a lot of time. It's a great thing, but it's also a time consuming thing. But Memorial Day weekend, I'll dedicate that. It'll probably be 100 degrees and humid, so that'll give me something to do inside. But
there you go.
Plenty of sports to talk about today, Scott. We will start again. I think we started here last week with NIL discussion, both on the micro level at Iowa. We got a chance to catch up with Gary Barter this week in Chicago at Big Ten meetings. And then we've got the macro, the national, Nick Saban weighing in and Jimbo Fisher currently having a press conference. Saban took a shot at him last night, took a shot at historically black colleges and universities. That's kind of where he went a little sideways last night in my mind. But it's a very complicated issue with a lot of layers to it, and we'll try to hit on as much as we can as it pertains to our little neck of the woods here. Let's start with the Iowa portion of this first, Scott. You were in Chicago, and we can kind of we'll table the Big Ten divisions and where Iowa's going, because there was also a lot of NCAA news this week in terms of football rules and regulations. So a lot to cover, but let's kind of focus in first on what you got to hear from Gary Barta. I will hold my opinions here until after I get a more in-depth review from you than the couple of tweets that I read that had me shaking my head again.
Yeah, NIL, it's it's really, you know, it's surprisingly, it wasn't the forefront, I would say, in Chicago. I would say divisional play was more the main angle because there was so much discussion and different angles. But I would have to say, I asked him specifically, I guess, first about collectives and, you know, where I was sitting, and he feels pretty good. He thinks that they're going to have something finalized by, you know, by summer, you know, and it's summer to me, like, you know, June 21st or 22nd or whenever it's actually officially summer or sometime in the summer. He said the summer and by fall. So in place for the fall. So, and, you know, Gary has always been kind of conservative in this regard and in a lot of areas, but specifically with this, and just said, you know, that it's been, you know, really targeted on doing it the right way, that recruiting is not part of the equation, that no boosters are talking to recruits or potential, they're not talking to potential prospects in the portal, and gathering interested companies and individuals who want to give to the name, image, and likeness, and networking for the future and that type of thing. So he said, we're real close. And so to me, I kind of posed it to him. I'm like, are you afraid of getting left behind? Because I think that's the fear, at least the fan base has right now, which is, you know, everybody else is ramping it up. Iowa is trying to do it in piecemeal fashion. And he's like, no, I'm not worried about that. You know, this complies with the rules and the spirit of the rule because it can't be used for recruiting, but, and they're on a good pace, but I don't know. I mean, I guess I left that kind of ambiguous from what he had to say, which is they're very cautious and pragmatic, but it's just a wild, wild west world right now. And so I think even announcing that it's there and they're just finalizing a couple of things would go farther than we're almost there. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get Gary is trying to do some PR work here. That's part of his job to let fans know, relax. Wasn't that Aaron Rodgers that told people to relax? But it's tough to do that when you see what's going on around you and around the country. I think he said in your piece that he doesn't feel like they're behind. I'm not sure how you look at this objectively and say Iowa's not behind. To me, it's pretty clear and evident that Iowa is behind right now. It's his, you know, his job is to figure this out and put Iowa in the best position. And time will tell if that happens, Scott, but they are behind right now and it has cost them. You know, I don't know if you could say that, you know, if something was in place, Iowa would have had success basketball wise in the transfer portal. But I don't know if you say they wouldn't have had success. I mean, it's hard to gauge without talking to, you know, the two kids that went to other schools. I haven't really talked to the Caspers about this and how much it played into their recruitment. But there's enough there. There's enough meat on the bone to me to feel comfortable in saying that Iowa is behind. And they have a chance to catch up here. But time is of the essence. I really think that, you know, you can do it the right way and you can have a system that you're comfortable with, proud of, you know, academic achievement being, you know, one of the components, all of that thing, all of those elements can be in there, but you can't, if they wait till August or September, that's to me, that's just not being with it.
You're absolutely right. Cause right now they've had time. They've seen this. The competitors down south are racing. And of course we're seeing the chaos and the OK Corral aspect of it right now with Nick Saban and Deion Sanders and Jimbo Fisher and what have you. But, you know, and it's a little bit more prudent in this part of the world. But look at Iowa State men's basketball. When, you know, they secured the big man from St. Bonaventure. He would have been great for Iowa. Now, did the collective play a role in it? I don't know. I can't predict that. I haven't talked to him. So that's probably, you know, I'm not talking out of my, you know what, but I am, you know, speculating to some extent. And then also that huge recruit at Omaha Ballou, is that how you pronounce it? You know, it made Iowa State one of his four finalists. Iowa wasn't one of them. Iowa wanted him for a long time. I believe he visited Iowa, didn't he? And,
multiple
and
times.
So, yeah. So, you know, does that mean that Iowa didn't get a chance, or Iowa, is it because of NIL? Maybe. You know, it's not helping them. Let's put it that way. That if they would have a collective, if they had a plan, if they had an opportunity to put this in front of potential recruits, then we would know for sure. But right now, if you don't have anything, it's hurting them. And really, there's one player and one litmus test that stands above the rest, and that's it's an offensive tackle from the Des Moines area. If Caden Proctor picks Iowa and the collective is in place, fine. But if they don't have it in place and he goes to Bama or Oregon or someplace like that, there will be hell to pay, and absolutely deservedly. They cannot lose that player, and certainly not for this issue.
No. And I was hoping to hear more, and you don't want to show panic or distress, but more of a sense of urgency. And like you, Scott, just to say, yeah, we have one. It's, you know, we have one, and we're communicating that to student athletes. We're communicating that we have something in place. These are the parameters we're going to have in it. This is our idea. This is what we're looking to do. You know, I don't see, maybe they are doing that, but why not just tell you that if they are doing that? And that puts people's minds at ease a little bit, and you know they're being proactive.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, a collective or thereabouts, you don't have to wait till all the T's are crossed.
No.
You know, this is a new era. There is time to just, voila, get everything, you know, to work through the details. Because, hell, these kids can't even sign for another 7 months, you know, anyway.
Right.
So you can get that all ironed out. But to get it out there and to tell people, yeah, we've got one lined up. It's going to be we're going to be very competitive. It's going to be a robust conversation we're going to have with people. And we will ensure that we don't fall behind. If you just smooth that out, all of this goes away. You know, and then if you start losing players, it's because, well, the other team had way more money, or it's not because, well, Iowa's still twiddling their thumbs while they're opening up a cash, you know, a briefcase. And I understand the whole idea of wanting to do it the right way, but there is no right way now. The NCAA is impotent. The NCAA is not doing anything. You better be proactive. You better get your players. Otherwise, again, you know, when you hit one player among rivals could determine the outcome of football games. And a football game has such ramifications on everything that, I mean, if Iowa had one more player against Wisconsin in 2019 who could fight off a block or push somebody in the end zone, they go to overtime at Wisconsin and they win that game. That's it. And they go to Indianapolis. Legacies are at stake for one player, one great player. Don't lose it. So, yeah, I think the caution aspect, which is kind of Gary's MO over his career, to me is not the right policy right now.
Yeah, and it comes off a little bit as arrogance. It comes off a little bit like stubbornness, holding yourself above what others are doing right now. Spent some time this week kind of reading more from a legal standpoint of, you know, because I think there's kind of people are wondering if schools are going to be penalized for what they've done so far or what they might do in terms of this NIL collective and using it to recruit. From what I've been able to gather, it's the NCAA, as Scott said, is toothless. Schools are going to at most get slapped on the wrist. And going forward, if, you know, they're trying to, restrict Gary with the transfer portal or thing too, yeah, was not good this week. That was bad for Iowa. We could touch on that in a second, but the floodgates are opened here and you need to get involved, and you can't keep waiting for, you can't say we're not going to use it for, you can say you're not going to use it for recruiting if you want to project an image of, we don't want to be dirty, we don't want to get our hands dirty, but you have to get your hands dirty here. You may not like, you have to wrap your mind around, this is not your father's NCAA football. This is now, there are ways that schools are using this to their advantage. You have to use this to your advantage. And there's no other way around it. And if schools are using it to recruit, you need to use it to recruit.
Absolutely. And as you're talking, the floodgates have opened in College Station, Texas.
I am totally shocked Jimbo Fisher would not take this line down.
Yeah. Do you see the quotes here? Saban's a narcissist, calls him God, says he will not take Saban's call. We're done. You coach with people like Bobby Bowden, you learn how to do things. You coach with the other people like Saban, and you learn how to not do things. It implies people should investigate into Saban's activities. He's hammering up for his operation and tactics, and he says he's been declaring, violating NCAA rules for years. Woo, boy, here we go.
Yeah.
Well, there's no accusations lobbed in Iowa's direction this spring.
It would be great if all the skeletons in the closet came out right now, if these guys just started rolling on each other. Yeah, well, I remember when you did this.
Yeah.
I remember when how we got this guy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a red wedding, if you will, you know, between their two campuses, and it's going to get nasty, and it's going to.
That game's in Tuscaloosa this year, right? It was in College Station last year.
Yeah, it's October 8th.
Ooh, yeah, that's going to be fun. That will be fun. You can bet College Game Day will be there, and Fox Noon kickoff, and anybody else who can get there will be there for that one. So, it's certainly making this sport a lot more interesting. I don't know if it's for the better overall, and I've kind of been at. Since day one, when this all started, I've been for more compensation for players, student athletes, however you want to do it. And now it's just kind of all over the place. Whereas we talked about at the front end, Scott, they could have made this a whole lot more neat and regulated. And now it's just going to be who knows where this ends. And it doesn't seem like the end's anywhere near.
No, it isn't. The NCAA was proven to be an impotent organization that spent, $300 million on trying to fight the NIL. And now, here you are. It was fascinating when I was in Chicago talking to other Big Ten ADs. You know, Gene Smith in particular is probably the most forthright and in his thoughts and views. And, he wants to create a separate umbrella, if you will, not necessarily remove themselves from the NCAA, but have college football, the 130, the FBS teams to kind of operate under their own fiefdom, with their own rules, own regulations, own oversight, a czar or committee or whatever. Kirk has called for a czar in the past. So, I mean, there are things I think that, he's certainly calling for. I think college football needs that. But how do you, the conferences aren't going to just be willing to give away power either. So this is going to be interesting. I'm all for, I think the collective part of this was the one that I think really shocked everybody, that nobody was prepared for. And he said, you know, all the ADs said the same thing, that they were not prepared for the collectives. That, and, you know, the pay for play and, you know, the individuals getting NIL deals, that was one thing, but the collectives producing all this money, that was not what it was all about. And yeah, this is going to be messy. And I think you're going to see a lot of bullets flying in the southern part, you know, but Iowa still needs to, you know, can't sit on the sidelines forever.
No, and it's just, it all is the arrogance of the institution that is major college football and basketball to a degree where the people in charge didn't see this coming. Just, yeah. It makes, we talked about it, Scott, before this, even the NIL even came about and there was the Supreme Court decision. You know, you talked about the $300 million that was spent to fight against this. Now you're throwing more money at it, trying to figure out how to get away. Instead of just working and understanding, you know, that when you announce billion-dollar TV deals, and that I saw, I can't remember, I think it's the guy from USA Today, Steve
Weiberg.
Yeah, that announced, he kind of laid out that how many coaches are making over $9 million a year. Head football coaches are making over $9 million a year this year. Kirk Ferentz makes $7 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to sit there and then think, okay, we'll go to court and we'll be able to limit what the players make is just mind-boggling to me when there's that much money involved right now. You have, a coordinator's making over $1 million a year. You can't, to me, that if you're still, and we can tie this into what Gary Barta said on the Iowa podcast that you wrote about last week, about him saying the quiet part out loud, is still that old mindset of we're going to do things to restrict that the one-time transfer rule to be able to control NIL. That mindset has to change, Scott. And what Gary said was not good for the University of Iowa. It's not good for Iowa in recruiting circles. When you have your athletic director saying that, you know, you can, these guys can keep fighting this tooth and nail, but the ones who fight this the longest, I think are going to come up the shortest.
Without a doubt. That was something that I asked multiple ADs about, and they were like, no, we're not doing that. I mean, so it's fallen on deaf ears. I mean, you know, one of the ADs I like the most probably over there is Josh Whitman from Illinois. And he's like, we do not want to have separate rules for separate sports. You know, there's only been men's basketball and football and hockey and baseball or whatever are the ones where you had to sit out a year. We don't want to have that anymore. This is, you know, it's only been a year, you know, maybe in 5 years we'll reconsider it. So trying to put whatever cliche you want, put the genie back in the bottle or whatever, it's not going to happen. You've got to learn how to live with this. Now, there are ways that conferences can limit this as far as intra-conference transfers, you know, certain dates that you can say, okay, you've got a 15 or 30-day window on when you can transfer, and no more than that, or, you know, and things are to be eligible for the next year. You can do those kinds of things, but for Gary to announce and then to kind of double down on it, you know, he did double down on it, you know, when I asked him about it, it's just, yeah, it's an old way of thinking. It's not the way it's going to be, period. You've got to learn how to live with this, adapt or die. And we've seen this way too often over the last 15, 16 years. And I think this is just another case where figure out how to advance the sport, but you're going to have to live with it. 9-0 in the Supreme Court, and anything should tell you everything we did before is wrong. We've got to go with a completely new idea of going forward.
And that we got here based on litigation. You can bet whatever the NCAA member institutions, if they, you know, if they go the Gene Smith route and, you know, break off for FBS schools, if it's at all seems inequitable, your ass is going to end up in court again.
Yeah.
And the precedents are set here. So you can't just do whatever you want anymore and make whatever rules you want anymore. Those days are done.
You know, going back probably close to 20 years ago, you know, I mean, Iowa did what it needed to do with Kirk. It had to pay Kirk, you know, otherwise he's going to the NFL or even greater blue blood in football. Right thing to do. It's proven to be a great thing for the university. But what it did was, when you're paying a guy $4 million 15 plus years ago, you know, it started the ball rolling. And when you saw budgets go from $42 million 15 years ago to now $150 million, you know, somebody's got to get paid. And you see all the people getting paid, and the people who haven't been paid were the athletes all along. And it's one thing if, like in high school, you know, those coaches don't make anything. The ADs don't make anything. You know, so the athletes who are loving the game, but this is a different era. This is a different environment. And so they, when the height of their marketability for 90% of them comes at the university level, you are really restricting their opportunity to make money at the height of their marketability. You know, when they are, you know, superstars, if you will, a Spencer Lee, a Caitlin Clark, Megan Gustafson. Once they leave the University of Iowa's tent, they're not going to be as marketable at the next level. That's the same case with a Jordan Bohannon or, you know, whoever, you know, a lot of the football players. So why restrict them all those years from that opportunity? Now, the collectives and stuff, that's something they're just going to have to get into. But, you know, all these years, I always wonder, you know, somebody like a Marvin McNutt, what he would have made at Iowa, Sean Green, you know,
Brad
AJ Epineza. Yeah.
Brad Banks,
Tavian Banks, Brad Banks, you know, anybody, frankly. So I think right now they've got to figure it out how. Well, they got to build some sort of consensus, and you've got to have good leadership to do it. There's not much leadership in the NCAA at that level, none. But I think Gene Smith, to me, is probably the leader, probably the most respected of the athletic directors, and has the best plan. It's probably worth exploring to try to get this, at least get some structure going. But based on what we're seeing in the SEC today, I don't know that we're going to get any consensus on the color of the sky, let alone the color of the green in your pocket.
If you want to talk about money, Scott, and this doesn't really pertain to Iowa because Iowa is going to be in the percent that isn't doing this, but Andy Wittry, college sports reporter with Warner Media, tweeted today or recently, 37 of the 52 public Power 5 schools, or 71.2%, spent something on football severance payments during the 2021 fiscal year. A new record. In 2006, roughly 71% didn't spend anything on buyouts. So that's another area where you're seeing money going to coaches from universities. There's money there for that. There's money there for so many things. To just continue to say there's not money there for the student athletes, you just don't have a leg to stand on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, so I like the fact that now there's an opportunity for them to provide academic gifts, because I always thought it was, there's probably nothing to me more hypocritical at that level than to pay the AD for APR grad rates,
right,
and the coaches and everything, but the athletes themselves for getting a 3.0 or 3.5 don't get anything for that. And so I am glad for that. It's just, yeah, it's the weirdest industry on the face of the earth, and, you know, athletic related, and it's not going to change, but, you know, as far as its importance, because, I mean, people still go to these games. They still watch them. It's the second most popular. Football is the second most popular sport behind NFL. So I don't know. I don't know where this is all going. But it hop on, man. It's every day there's something new. Every day there's something more to investigate, to look into. And when you have an Auburn, you can just make Auburn the poster child for the payouts because they seem to fire a coach every year. And then here, oh, $20 million, go away. And it's like, holy cow, what happened here? You know, and I'm like, who are these boosters? They're probably the same ones that pay their employees minimum wage and don't want any kind of minimum wage hike, but yet they'll pay $20 million to fire a football coach who went 8-5. So it's just it's a jacked up room, man.
Got to support the team. want to let folks know that support for this podcast comes from Systems Unlimited, celebrating 50 years of providing services to people living with disabilities and mental health needs throughout East Central Iowa. A list of their services and upcoming events can be found at sui.org. Great organization. Thank you to Systems Unlimited for their support for the podcast. Thank you to Edward Jones and Wild Rose Casino, also sponsors of the podcast. Appreciate their support. Let's move a little bit into the Nick Saban diatribe, whatever you want to call last night. It almost seems, Scott, like it's the old guard fighting. And we talked about this a few minutes ago with Gary Borda. It almost seems like the old guard is fighting this. I've seen some kind of speculation that this was at a business meeting and Saban is trying to raise money with this by saying that Alabama needs to compete. I kind of get that, but couldn't he just do that in private and they're going to get the money? It's Alabama.
Yeah, but I think he wanted to send a message. I mean, anything Nick Saban does or says,
it's calculated.
Yeah, he's too old, you know. He's got his eyes on something and he's pointing it out. And, you know, part of it probably is related to, hey, start funneling us some money so we don't finish second in recruiting. But then when he says A&M bought every player on their team, we didn't buy one player. Ooh, okay. You know, you're throwing down the gauntlet. And then I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. That's probably directed more to the boosters saying,
poor Alabama. I feel so bad for Alabama.
Yeah, right. I know. They're not
going to be able to sustain this. This is the end of Alabama football as we know it.
Well, it's going to happen. when he retires, there's going to be a humongous drop-off at some point. They're not going to sustain what they have. And it's going to be worse than when the Bear retired back in 81 or 82, I mean, because this time around, I mean, then the next coach goes 9-3 and finishes second in the West Division twice, or whatever they're going to have. I mean, probably not divisions, but, man, they're going to feel it. They're going to feel it big time. So, you know, lose to Iowa in the Citrus Bowl. You know, that's definitely grounds for firing. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be ferocious. So, but yeah, poor Alabama. They're nothing in their pockets.
Yeah, I think he could have gotten his point across without taking. I'm glad he did because it's entertaining to see him take shots at Jimbo Fisher, his former assistant. The one with Jackson State and Deion Sanders to me was just, why even go there? You know, I think he was torqued off that Travis Hunter chose Jackson State. And he kind of, you know, I don't know, I'll paraphrase basically him saying, you know, this was a talented Division I recruit that picked a historically black college or university. To me, that just reeks of arrogance. And why should this kid go to a historically black college? To me, that was just, that one left a sour taste in my mouth. And Deion fired back at him too and basically said, show me the receipts. So yeah. I don't know. I didn't think it was a good night for Saban overall. I get what he was trying to do, but not that part of it to me just sucked.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the beast these days. And I think, you know, talking about those, he's firing all kinds of shots at everybody. And, you know, right now they only have three recruits, which, Alabama, you know, again, they're not only going to get their 8 5 stars instead of 12, but, right. But still, this is, I'm all for it. Honestly, maybe I'm different. I think right now, if there's something, we don't know what he knows regarding Texas A&M and what maybe they're doing. You know, even Gary Barta said that people have called up his recruits or their players and offered them. So there is all kinds of rampant cheating and tampering, no question. And so if this is his way to highlight this and get it going and point the laser pointer in 5 different directions, and we all got to chase it like a bunch of cats, so be it. This is a wild and wacky time. I mean, you know, I'm intrigued by what Prime's doing at Jackson State. That's something that has never been done before. We'll see. And you know what? If he's using NIL, more power to him. I don't have a problem with that. And if Travis Hunter doesn't like it, or if after a year or two he realizes that's not the place for him, he'll transfer. You know, Prime will leave at some point. So I think this is let it all out. Let's get it out in the open. And this time of year, we don't have anything else to talk about anyway. Well, except this year where we have everything else to talk about.
And I get the Nick Saban thing. I wish he'd leave the little guys alone. Leave Prime alone and his HBCU schools. Go take a shot at the big boys like Jimbo. Jimbo Jumbo, whatever his name is. Let them take some shots at him. Scott, the focus of the meetings in Chicago this week were divisionals, division plays, and the future of just the alignment in the Big Ten. NCAA deregulated that this week, I guess, for lack of a better term, and the Pac-12 has done away with its divisions. What's the latest that we've heard in regards to the Big Ten and what the future of divisions look like there? Are we going to have the legends and leaders come back?
Yeah, it's already on the wall there in Rosemont. I think they all can acknowledge that maybe the idea – was good with legends and leaders to have an equitable divisions. The thought of the the names, they'll never bring those back again, and they cringe every time they hear it. So that's at least to the personnel.
It's that and the trophy, the Cy-Hawk trophy. Those are the two things that I've thought of in the last decade that I was like, man, bad ideas.
That's what happens. I mean, not to diss too many people in that line of work, because my wife works in marketing, but when you allow things like that to be controlled in a think tank, you can really screw up when you have a farm family trophy that the first time in history that Iowa and Iowa State fans agree on something like that. And then you have legends and leaders, but no, there will divisions, I think, are on a crash course with history. It's not going to be this year. It's potentially could be 2023. And certainly the changes will take place before the CFP is ignited. It's just a matter of if there's one thought that's prevailing every single idea, and they're varied big time by different ADs and schools, it's that whatever happens has to best position the Big Ten for the college football playoff. And that really starts the whole conversation. And so it is that no divisions? Is that East-West? Is that American National? Is it North-South? You know, that's really the whole thing. My guess, my interpretation from the conversations I had with multiple ADs there, and Kevin Warren too, was that divisions are almost – I think they're gone. That Penn State has been the most vocal. They believe that there's been inequity among the divisions in the championship game. It's true based on the results. Regular season, no question, it's been even. I mean, East versus West. Ohio State has tipped the scales, but Ohio State tips the scales in everything. So what's the best way to do it, how to do it. Do you preserve three teams, two teams, one team, one rivalry per year, none, cycle through them? That's really the fascinating part of this. And like Penn State said, AD Sandy Barber, who's retiring, so she can say whatever she wants and it doesn't really matter. But she said, there's nobody I'd pound the table for that we have to play every year. Maybe Maryland and Rutgers feel the same way. And we're unique because we're still kind of a newbie in this league, which is kind of laughable. You've been in it for 30 years, but it's understandable. whereas Iowa probably has the most rivalries that it wants to preserve with three. And so where do you go? I mean, I think if I was to guess today, it would be two preserved, but you know, that's going to be tough. I mean, in Iowa, I hate to say it, but it's like a Sophie's choice. Which one do you give up? And my fear is that it'd be either Wisconsin or Minnesota, because they're not going to allow, I mean, because Nebraska gets to pick two. Nebraska has a voice here, and Nebraska, Iowa, they've built a lot of equity with, you know, with the Black Friday game. Last year's ratings were the highest in BTN history. That's probably going to stay. So if they go to two, which one do you pick? You know, you pick the greatest trophy in sports, in my opinion, or Iowa's probably greatest series, closest rival in Big Ten play. So I don't know. I have my own views, and I've got to the point, and I'm writing this today, that everybody's overthinking this stupid issue. Just play who you want to play. You know, if Iowa has three teams it wants to play every year, let them play those three teams. If Michigan has two with Ohio State and Michigan State, fine. And then just cycle through everybody else. You have nine games. It's not like you have, it's not like when it was divisionals and then you can only have like three games. So I think it's, that would be the simplistic matter, but we all, they're collegiate bureaucrats. So they're going to make everything crazy and stupid before they make it better.
Yeah, and most of this podcast, we've discussed bad decisions and stubbornness and lack of foresight and all those other things. I'm kind of with you. Just let the schools, if they have the rivalries, don't ruin them in the name of trying to get into the college football playoff. Obviously, that's the main objective here. The Pac-12 came out and said that was their objective this week, of doing away with divisions. And it makes a lot of sense. I get it. But you're going to have unbalanced schedules as it is. There's no way to have equitable schedules. There are going to be teams that have easier schedules because you can't predict how good teams are going to be. And if you try to do that and balance them, there's no way to make it happen. Personally, for me, I would kick Nebraska to the curb if I was Iowa, because I think I would rather see them play Wisconsin and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Certainly Minnesota to me is at the top. Floyd's at the top. You have to have that one. But I think Wisconsin and Iowa is too important. And I think if you were to move, I get the Nebraska-Iowa rankings, but if you were to put Wisconsin and Iowa on a Friday, or Minnesota and Iowa on a Friday, I think you could probably get similar rankings, TV ratings. Maybe not as good, but enough to justify it. But I get it. I would be surprised if Iowa and Nebraska goes away.
Yeah. And that the problem is that it's not Iowa's decision always to make, and Nebraska gets a voice. Right. And who's Nebraska going to get, you know, Rutgers and Maryland. I mean, so, you know, that's not going to happen. But when you go down the list of the 14 schools, each one has different thoughts and priorities. It really opened my eyes when I was doing – I did a series on Legends Leaders, how it came together, and asking each athletic director in the Big Ten, okay, what was your thought? Why did you want it this way? And like Michigan State at the time was like, you know, we pounded the table for Northwestern more than Penn State. Even though Penn State, you know, land grant trophy, they're playing them at the end of every year. But that was not their focus. Their focus was, we want to get to Chicago every year. And so that's who they really were advocating for. And then you look at, so everybody's got an agenda and an idea. And that's really going to be the focus. Like, I went through the list of games that I considered as critical, and then those that I considered as, you know, really worth discussing. And then finally, you know, some that you know, maybe are historical and base, but really aren't that important in the big picture. You know, like, you know, you took a couple of trophy games, like Illinois, Ohio State, or Michigan, Minnesota. Great trophies, but that's not worth protecting. But I think there are 9 games in the Big Ten that you probably need to say these have to be played every year. 3 of them just have to involve Iowa. Ohio State, Michigan, if you don't protect that one, then somebody needs to get fired. You know, and a couple somebody needs to get fired. And then you throw on a Michigan State, in-state rivalry, prominent programs. Minnesota, Wisconsin is the oldest rivalry in college football, or most played rivalry. Northwestern, Illinois, Indiana, Purdue, you know, those are in-state rivalries. You can't get rid of those. Ohio State, Penn State is maybe the second most prominent game in the Big Ten. You know, you're going to get 10 million viewers for that game when it's, you know, if it's in prime time. Then you look at Iowa, Minnesota. Again, they played 115 times. They play for the most iconic trophy in sports, in my eyes. You know, you could argue the axe might be there, but I think that's important. Iowa, Nebraska. Again, you know, Nebraska is still, despite its woes on the field, is still a blue blood, and it still generates a lot of interest. And finally, Iowa, Wisconsin. They knew from Legends and Leaders they cannot surrender that rivalry. So why do it now? And then there are a bunch of others that I think enter that conversation that need to be discussed. Michigan, Penn State. It's, you know, 2 big blue bloods. When they play, people watch. And when you're going to get paid a significant amount of money with these new, media rights arrangements, they matter. You know, the Fox or CBS or NBC, one of those two, does not want to get, instead of Michigan, Penn State, they don't want to get Michigan Rutgers. So you got to make sure your inventory matches the paycheck. You know, there's the land grant trophy. There's Illinois Purdue. They play for a cannon. They're only 90 minutes away. And so there's all these other ones that matter too. But to me, there are 9 that absolutely need to be played. And Iowa happens to have 3 of them.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that may, just out of fairness, it may be tough to save all 3. And I don't know what the plan would be on how they figure it out. If everybody gets a seat at the table, I think that's probably how you do it. And you do it like a, you know, a freaking fantasy football draft and just say, okay, you know, Michigan, I don't know, draw them out of a hat. This is who picks first. You know, Iowa, you know, if Iowa picks, if Iowa most likely is going to pick Minnesota with its first, you know, say it's first round pick, Iowa's going to pick Minnesota. Then Minnesota's going to pick Wisconsin. Yeah. Nebraska's going to pick Iowa. Boom. Mm-hmm. Iowa's done. Right.
Yeah.
And Wisconsin, Iowa's out. If you were to do it, if you were to limit to 2, and then, so to me, if they blow it up, Scott, it's going to be tough, I think, to save 3.
Yeah. And so that's why 3 is going to be a number. But what I'm writing today is, these leagues have been overthinking this for years. Ever since the SEC went to 2 divisions in 1992 and decided that you're going to play everybody in your division and you're going to have X number of crossovers and everything's going to be equitable. Okay, I get it. But now that you're going back to what it once was, then maybe you need to say, what was it like in the 80s and the SEC and the Big Ten, which was you played games that made sense. You played opponents that you felt like you wanted to play every year, and then they kind of penciled in the rest of the schedule. For Iowa, you'd have 6 other opponents every year other than those 3. Maybe for Maryland and Rutgers, maybe they protect one another. Maybe they don't. Maybe they say, yeah, we're just kind of stapled together.
I think they both would pick Penn State.
Right. They would pick Penn State, but Penn State would not pick them.
No.
And that's the interesting scenario because – and then, you know, again, not that media partners have a voting right, but they do have some sway. And so they're going to look at this and say, okay, so you're not going to protect Iowa, Wisconsin. You're not going to protect Penn State and Michigan. You're not going to protect Penn State and Michigan State. Wow, those are 3 games that have the potential to garner, 20 million viewers plus combined. That's helps pay what we're paying you. We need those games. So to me, I think what would make the most sense is kind of going back to what it was like in the 80s when you played these certain opponents every year. And then there are some that you just kind of filter in. And if that means that Rutgers and Maryland say, all right, we'll just play each other and then filter everybody else in. Okay. So you got eight opponents every year that are going to be different or going to be, you know, rotated. It's not going to matter in the big picture of competitive imbalance. You know, Iowa-Wisconsin is not going to be an imbalanced game. You're not talking about the 13th and 14th worst teams playing each other. So, but same thing with Penn State and Michigan. So I think they're overthinking this. And, if Indiana only has one and it's Purdue, that's, hey, we could play everybody else. We don't care. Fine. That's good. Play everybody else. You know, maybe in for Iowa, you include Northwestern. You know, that would be a great one to keep. But overall, if they have to Sophie's Choice it, I think Wisconsin's probably lost. And that would just be an incredibly stupid move again by the Big Ten. And frankly, it goes back to leadership at Iowa to say, not to put your foot down and say, we'll agree for anything, but this is what our line is. I know all for one, one for all. The Big Ten's always been that way. But sometimes, damn it, you got to do what's best for your institution. And not having a game that gets a team 2.5 hours away is wrong with a capital W.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, we talk about money ruining a lot of things, but hopefully, yeah, as you said, the media rights and the TV streaming, whatever it is, has some say here. And maybe that's enough, because at the end of the day, everybody loves money.
Yeah.
Whether it's Rutgers in Maryland or Nebraska and Iowa on the other end of the Big Ten, other side of the country in the Big Ten, you just have to sell. Okay, this is what's going to make us the most money. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they mostly do. and that's what's really good about this right now is that they're not rushing. There's a lot of discussion. And, like I said, Penn State, all of them have different angles, and it's really fascinating to talk to them because it's all provincial. Penn State's like, well, we believe that in 8 years, the East versus West, the championship games have been inequitable, that we need a different system. And it's understandable when you're behind Goliath in that division that you can't get to your pathway to the championship game. Championships matter. Okay, well, I can buy that, I suppose, even though in regular season play, it's flat out even. But then, Ohio State's like, we just need to cycle through some of these teams. It's really ridiculous that Iowa hasn't been to Ohio State since 2013. Okay, I can buy that too. Illinois, Josh Whitman was like, look, I can handle one, realignment, but I don't want to go for two. I don't want to do something today. And then in 3 years, the playoff's completely different. We decided to do something different. Let's not do that. Gary was very pragmatic, Big Ten, I understand, but we got to do what's best for the Big Ten and all that kind of stuff. And then you look at, Mark Coyle, who I talked to at Minnesota, and I'm like, okay, say you get one, who do you pick? He's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. We have, if I pick Wisconsin, then everybody likes Iowa has a different opinion and same thing. So I really get it. But to me, what's the hallmark of the Big Ten? It's rivalries, it's history, it's traditions. And if you're going to shed tradition just to make things, fit neat and in a box, you're throwing something away. So I think, but then again, if you decide to protect three rivals, well, is that going to work? Is that really necessary? I don't know. So I think overall, this is just going to be a really fascinating debate.
Yeah. And hopefully you hope that it winds up the best for everybody. And, Iowa doesn't get, they do what's best and not overthink it, as Scott said. And if it's three for Iowa and none for Maryland and Rutgers or each other or whatever, so be it. But just do what's best for the league and ultimately what's best to position you the best to make the college football playoff, because that is the ultimate goal over everything else.
Absolutely, because then you start to go, I mean, in divisional play, the problem is a couple of years ago with Northwestern, yeah. I think it was 8-5 or 8-4 or something going into that championship game. What if they upset Ohio State? Now, that's certainly capable of happening. But then you really you hurt your best team, you know, because of a great upset. You're not going to elevate that other team unless they automatically take the champion. And then you're going to hurt your number three team. Now, so I can understand why let's do away with divisions. Let's cycle through as many of these games as possible. So, in Iowa's case, that would be if they got three protected rivals, that would be 6 over 10 years. If it's 2, it's 7 over 11. So, that's fine. I think people can handle most of that. Play Illinois 7 out of 11 years, Indiana 2, Penn State, when we have scuba and dive and all that stuff going again. It's just a matter of, this is the classic cut off your nose to spite your face, cut off your great rivalries and some of your great games in order to ensure that everybody's playing everybody. You're playing Maryland just as often as you're playing Wisconsin. Give me a break. That's just not the way the world works. That's not the way college athletics works. You're not going to say Auburn, you're going to have to not play Georgia or the Deep South's oldest rivalry because you're going to play Kentucky just as much or Texas A&M. It's just stupid.
Yeah, and it'll be an ongoing story and one we'll continue to follow here on the podcast. These off-season storylines are the gift that keep on giving to our off-season podcast. So, no, all love from my end on this. Keep it coming. I talked a little bit about recruiting in relation to the NIL. We'll talk about recruiting now in relation to Iowa football. Iowa added its 8th known verbal commitment in the 2023 class. And for the uninitiated, those are young men who will be seniors next season and will enroll at Iowa either in January of 2023 or in June of 2023. Got a new crop coming in here next month. That'll be the 22 class. But Zach Luttmer, a 6'1", 195-pound defensive back from Central Lyon in Rock Rapids, Iowa. Another in-state kid in this class. There are now 8 kids in the class, and 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, half of them, are from Iowa. So Iowa doing well in-state, which you have to take care of your own backyard. And Iowa has done well with in-state defensive backs. And I like this kid's film, Scott.
Yeah, I do too. He's one of those that, from the far northwest part of Iowa, they always seem to come through and do well. I mean, Rock Rapids, Inwood West Lyon and Central Lyon both have just over the years have produced great players. I remember voting on those players way back when I was at the Muscatine Journal and you were at the Press Citizen, in all state meetings and stuff. And they've always just had really good players. And here's another one, a do-it-all, everything player. Who's going to step in at safety? And yes, he doesn't have a star now, but he'll have 3 by the time that he signs. And then next thing in year 2, he'll be a quality contributor, and then voila, he'll be probably a 3-year starter. It just seems to go down that path.
Rinse and repeat.
Yeah, exactly. So, to me, I think there's just a lot of, questions. Next month is going to be pivotal. We all know that.
Yeah.
There's 3 obviously in the state, but that are, and they're all kind of in that Des Moines area that really are pivotal going forward. And Patton, Kai Black, and of course Proctor. And 2 of them, it's probably going to come down to between Iowa and Iowa State. And so you never want to lose to Iowa State in a head to head like that. So,
yeah, no doubt. Important. June 24th, the weekend of June 24th is the big official recruiting visit weekend where they'll bring most of the members of the 23 class that have committed and then top targets in that class and future classes. Aiden Hall, a linebacker from Harlan, got offered last week, I think on the same day that Luttmer committed. Minnesota has since offered him. He's visited here multiple times. He's another important in-state recruit. Iowa State has not offered him, which is interesting. Harlan, Iowa State historically has done better with Harlan than Iowa. Maybe it's the little Cyclones or Cyclones nickname or whatever. But that one will be interesting. Talked to Aiden last week. I think he likes Iowa a lot. We'll kind of see how that one plays out. It's amazing to me. A lot of these guys, Scott, I check out their Twitter and just kind of poke around for information them on internet. Most of them can dunk a basketball. I saw Zutmer, and you can check it out on his Twitter, of him dunking with ease. And I'm just like, man, I dunked once. I think I was in like, it was between my summer of my 10th and 11th grade year when I was at my my best athleticism before I got into like to being a junior and senior. And I would, you know, party every now and then. And, you know, my body type changed a little bit, still athletic, but not as athletic, but it's a great feeling. Just Iowa's done a really good job, and the in-state kids have done a really good job of cross training. You look at somebody like, you know, Aaron Graves that's coming in. Scott's written about him. I have a story today about him, a guy who's competed in track in the winter, was in wrestling and basketball. Just really good all around athletes that are coming into the sport right now of college football.
You know, and that's the beauty of things in Iowa in particular. I mean, a lot of the smaller towns, there's not much to do. And a lot of them that are that athletic decide they're going to play basketball. They love sports. So they wrestle, they play basketball, they run track, they play baseball in the summer for most of their life. And it's, and they're good at it because they're good athletes and they usually have great size. So, you know, that's really what's been helpful. When you get into the bigger metro areas, you know, Des Moines, you know, somewhat around here, even Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, you have a little bit more specialization. Maybe they play one other sport or something like that. But, you know, but then you also have the training mechanisms. You know, you have the elite type personal trainers that they participate with, and that helps them be able to, you know, enhance their athletic ability. So I think it's a good case here in Iowa that we have. And Aaron Graves, or, you know, I mean, then you have a guy like a Tyler Linderbaum going way back. He's a four sport athlete, a lot of four sport athletes. So
Ben Keeter. Yeah. Ben Keeter coming in. I mean, he's coming in for two sports at Iowa. Brody Brecht.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it's becoming more prominent. Maybe that we're turning the clock back to the 80s when kids played multiple sports at the college level.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated by more than with Brecht was Ben Keeter. Because unless you're a heavyweight, can they coexist? Now, he is awesome at both sports, no question. I mean, he's as good of a wrestler we've had in town since, I mean, name Jeff McGinnis. I mean, am I off on that one? Mm-hmm. Or is there somebody else since then?
That sounds pretty good. There are some good, there are some good local wrestlers that are wrestling in other. I know Gage Marty from Solon committed to Iowa this week. So there are good wrestlers, but not at his level.
Exactly. I mean, he's what, undefeated, three-time state champion at different weight classes. And he's not,
he's prominent on a national level.
Yeah, right. It's not the 125 pounder or whatever we're talking about. We're talking about upper weights that it's very difficult to win that young. And then to be as good as he is in football too, and have carry that size. I just wonder what's going to happen. And when he gets to college, can he weigh 230 and play linebacker at Iowa? How far does he have to cut? You know, what happens injury wise, you know, that type of thing. So I'm fascinated by that still. He's in either sport, he's going to be, you know, tremendous in my eyes. So, but you know, going forward, I think there's some really interesting guys. I mean, not only in state, but out of state in this potential 2023 class. I mean, they're going to have to at some point get a tight end. You know, can Jackson Carver be one of them? You know, or are they going to go?
That'll be a tough pull. He's rising now, but yeah, they're, He'd be a good one.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the Detroit combination at defensive line, I mean, it's worked for Iowa in the past when you got Lattimore and Golston. You know, can Merriweather and Blair be that 2-0? And then are you good at defensive line then, or do you need to go get more? But, you know, in the 23 and 24 classes, they're really loading up on linebacker types. You know, we saw the commits in the 24 class. They've got some great athletes, but can they all play linebacker? Or are they going to go to a 3-4 eventually? you know, it's just, you know, but, you know, Asa Newsome, I know you talked to him. I'm interested to see what he thought. At first, he'd say, oh, no way, his brother goes to Nebraska. But it's not like Mosiah has done a lot there. So
nah, he's been injured a lot. He can't get healthy. Feel bad for the kid. Good kid. Good family. Yeah. The dad coaches. What's in Waverly? What's the Division III there?
Wartburg.
Wartburg. His dad is the head track coach at Wartburg.
Yeah, right. So, you know, you wonder if, you know, and then where does he end up playing? Is he more of an edge guy eventually, or is he an outside linebacker? Well, they don't really play, you know, as we saw with Justin Jacobs, they don't really play straight up outside linebacker anymore. So, all this is interesting. A lot of times just get the good guys on the bus and then figure out the seats afterwards, but there's still some big question marks.
Yeah, no question. And, 23 is the main focus right now, and now there are offers, as Scott said, there's offers going out right now in the 23 class, identifying guys. The coaches are out on the road this month and meeting with kids, and we're seeing offers go out every day right now in the 23 and 24 classes in particular. We mentioned Zach Luttmer and Ben Keeter. Those are two of the eight that are in 23. Then you have John Nestor. From Chicago, Leighton Jones, an offensive lineman from Indiana. Nestor is a defensive back. Alex Mota from Marion will come in as a receiver. Chase Brackney, who we saw at spring practice, he is he looks the part. They list him at 6'4", 260, and he's all of that. Defensive end from Colorado. Marco Linez, he's the only four-star, according to Rivals so far in this class. He's the quarterback at a Hunt school in Princeton, New Jersey. And then the first commitment in this class out of Norwalk is Maddox Bortreding Johnson, a defensive lineman. So that's who's in the class so far, and we'll see here. I would expect that class to potentially double by the end of June.
Yeah, I think so. Completely different situation than what we saw last June, huh?
Yes, for sure. It's much nicer with a more normal recruiting calendar in the off season, where it's not a fire drill like it was last summer after the whatever it was, 13, 14 month long dead period. So
yeah,
nice to have some normalcy back in the recruiting.
Right. So we've got some baseball coming right down to the end, huh?
Yep. This is we'll finish up with this. Iowa baseball firmly, clearly riding the bubble into the last weekend of regular season Big Ten play. Programming note for folks out there that are used to the Friday to Sunday weekend series. This weekend, it is Thursday through Saturday. So the day we are recording this, Thursday, May the 19th, Iowa will play host to Indiana, kicking off a three-game series at Banks Field. Get out there. Weather's great. Adam Mazur, a last home start tonight against Indiana. Iowa's minimum got to take 2 out of 3 here, Scott, and then maybe make some noise or not fall flat on its face at the Big Ten tournament. I think that's kind of how you frame this going into the final weekend.
Absolutely. And I think you just got to continue to take care of business, because the thing is, Indiana is a capable program. They've kind of underachieved this year. They have a losing record in the conference, but they're not way back. I mean, they're 10-11. Iowa's 14-7. So Iowa's been the better team, but still, you've got to go out and prove it. You're at home. You need to win 2 out of 3 just to feel like you're maintaining your status quo. If you win 3, you know, sweep them, then you feel like you've got a good chance. But I do think it comes down to, you know, performance this weekend and in Omaha as to where you end up. And, you know, do you end up in the play in the postseason or is it over? That, I think that's really going to be so there is some pressure. But, you know, with Adam Major, you've got the right guy on the hill right now because he's as good as it gets. He's as good as I can remember at Iowa for a long time as a day one starter.
Yeah, I saw Keith Law from The Athletic had him. He put out his mock sometime this week. I can't remember which day, yesterday or the day before, but he had Adam going 27th overall to Milwaukee. So obviously first round pick. That would be something. What a story. Another kind of from you know, pitching in the Dakotas to the Cape Cod League and then emerging kind of like a Keegan Murray, where you just kind of skyrockets up the professional, raising his professional stock.
Exactly. It's just been, you know, when we went into this year, I mean, we all knew, of course, of Brody and what he was going to do. And Brody has worked some really strong innings and struggled a little bit from time to time, but he'll get to be really good. But I don't know, at least in my view, I never really focused that much on what Adam Major could do. So I think this is a fascinating view. They got to win tonight. If you look at, you know, for everybody who's had scorn for Maryland and Rutgers, they're tied for first place. So I think this is a fascinating year for them as well. But Iowa took 2 out of 3 from Rutgers. But a last push is going to be really important for them. Win 2 out of 3 this week, maybe get to the championship or at least win 2 games, I think, in Omaha. If they do that, there's 4 out of 3, you know, you're 4-3 basically. Is that enough? You're going to be puckering up a little bit on Selection Monday, I think.
Yeah, Baseball America yesterday put out its weekly Field of 64 projection. It has Iowa as a 3 in South Bend. And if you're used to the NCAA basketball tournament bracketology and how those seeds are, for baseball, you have 1 through 4 seeds. So Iowa being a 3 seed is not and then you have automatic qualifiers. So yeah. Among the last 4 in, according to Baseball America, Iowa checks in at number 61 of 64. Mm-hmm. So that is squarely on the bubble, at least according to one projection.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of being about a 10 or an 11 seed in the NCAA basketball tournament. Yeah. So you got to be you can't hurt yourself. And there are other teams that have that potential for hurting you when they get in their conference tournaments because other teams are in regardless. And so you've got to take care of business when you can. And the ball is in their court because they win decisively, maybe sweep Indiana, win 3 games or something in Omaha, then they're in. You know, no worries there. But if you stumble and maybe even lose 2 out of 3, then you've got a serious, damage in Omaha. Otherwise, you could just be the best team left out of the tournament. And nobody wants to be that.
Nope. Yeah, so Iowa's in the position it wants to be in. It has a chance, controls, you know, where it will end up. The last team to beat Iowa in the series was Illinois, and Illinois is kind of fallen off since then. So that kind of gives you an idea of how things can go during a baseball season. So get out there and check out the Hawkeyes this weekend. I believe each game starts at 6 o'clock tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. So under the lights, should be good crowds out there. Not a lot going on. Graduation's over. So parking is available. So go check out. Yeah. Check out the Hawkeyes and, good luck to Rick Heller and the guys. Hopefully they can pull it out and extend the season as long as possible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Scott, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, there's beer, right?
Yes, you can buy beer as well. So a good time can be had by all. I'll be over there tonight, I think. I'll probably shoot photos tonight. So say hi if you see me or just don't be mean. So thank you to everybody for listening to the Hawkeye Hotspot podcast. We appreciate it. Scott and I will be back a week from today to talk some more Iowa Hawkeye athletics. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thank you again for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Say goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Scott.